Thank you. Such a warm welcome. Well, welcome, church and fellows at RCMU. I'm so glad you came to be with us this morning. And if you ever want to feel super, super awkward, watch a video of yourself in front of 1,000 people you don't know. Mission accomplished. Well, my name's Lee Hansen, and I am super excited to be here with you today. I've been coming to this church on and off for a couple years, and I got to tell you, you guys got a good thing going here. Right? Right? The energy and what God's doing here, I love your mission statement to show people who Jesus is. So I'm super glad to be here. You know, it's funny. Every time I preach, the week before always tends to be a killer. This week, you know, with the 4th of July coming up, we had all sorts of projects we were wanting to do out at the ranch. And I mean, my driveway is full of truckloads and truckloads of gravel. And the one machine that we needed all week to move this around and do what we needed to do, of course, what did it do? It broke down. We had family coming in town this weekend, so we're making dinners, making plans. My wife got sick. I didn't feel very good, all on top of trying to get ready for this sermon. And I'm super nervous because, right, like, I don't know you, and you don't know me, and so naturally, I really want to impress you, right? Like, I want to do my best. I want to do a good job. I want you to like me. And how many routine people do we have out there? Any of you that like to do the same thing over and over? You kind of have your rhythms. Well, every morning before I preach, I print my sermon off on a sheet of paper because I love to, you know, I write on it as I'm doing and do my thing. It's just my rhythm. Well, after this long, tough week and me being super nervous, I go to print my sermon and my printer breaks down. Mind you, I live in Hermosa. So I'm not across the street from a Kinko's or an Office Depot. So at this point, I'm having a full-fledged 13-year-old teenage girl meltdown. I'm not kidding. And I saw this some e-card that kind of fit my life. Maybe you've seen it. It says something like, I wish someone would just give me a pat on the back, a cup of coffee, and $5 million. It didn't happen, but I wished it would have. But my wife took me to lunch, which I guess was a good compromise because food always makes me feel better. And I'm sitting there with my wife in the middle of my meltdown, and I'm just telling her all these things and how stressed out I am because I want to do so well, and I want you to like me, and I want to fit in, and I want to prove that I can do it because I want them to ask me back again. And in the middle of all this, my wife stops, and she says, Lee, tell me again what you're preaching about tomorrow. I was like, well, I'm preaching on grace and acceptance. And she says to me, you should really think about that. You know, this is how bad it got for me this week. Have you ever looked around and noticed how the pastors are also trendy? They've got their hipster clothes and their flannel shirts. I went and bought a flannel shirt that I was going to wear today because I wanted to fit in. I can't make this stuff up. The reality is my whole life, I have longed to fit in and to be accepted. And my guess is that you have too. It's how we were designed, but the problem is you, like me, look for acceptance in places that we're never going to find it. You know, a few weeks back when I was told what this series was, that we were going to spend 4 weeks talking about who God is, the very first thought that came into my mind was, oh, I want to tell him about how gracious God is. Not just because I want you to know it, but because I so deeply and desperately want to know it myself. Because just think of how different our world would look, our relationships, our marriages, our church, this community, if we really understood unconditional acceptance, unconditional love, if we really understood God's grace. You know, maybe you're not a performer like me. Maybe you're not a perfectionist, but maybe you look for acceptance in being the best parent. And your child's happiness. Maybe you try to find it while you're bellied up to a bar. Maybe you look for acceptance in being the star athlete, or maybe even by being the perfect Christian. It doesn't really matter how it manifests itself because it all ends up in the same place. Jesus tells a great story in the Gospel of Luke. For some of you, it'll be really familiar. Others, it'll be a new story. It's the story of the prodigal son. And in this story, Jesus tells us about the father's radical acceptance of two very different sons. And whether you've heard this story a million times or it's the first time today, I was reminded of something a friend told me once. Kerry Walker, a good friend of mine, said to me, "Lee, growing closer to God is about taking the simple truths of the Bible and applying it to our lives." Right? Like sometimes I think we think growing up in Christendom, being a mature Christian, means knowing a bunch of stuff. Well, I don't think that's really true at all. It's about applying the simple truths like grace and love and acceptance and living those things out. That's what Christian maturity is. And so I don't really think we can talk about grace too much. And in this story, I think Jesus tells us our story and offers us a lot of hope. So the story goes, Jesus tells a story of about a father with two sons, and the younger son comes to his father, and he says, "I'd like to have my inheritance a little early, please." A tad selfish, some might say. And the father says, "Sure, here, go ahead and have it." So it says he divides up all that he had, and the younger son took what was his and got out of town. And it says he spent it wildly. This guy indulged on every sinful desire he had. He partied his brains out. And when everything ran out, it says he began to be in need. And he hired himself out to one of the most detestable, lowly jobs. He literally was feeding the pigs. And it says he was so desperate and finally realized how good he had it at his father's house that he longed to be filled with the food that even just the pigs were eating. And so he comes to his senses and he goes back to his father and he realizes what he's done. And he's broken about it, and he confesses, and he says, "Father, I've sinned against you, and I've sinned against God, and I'm so sorry. I'm not worthy to be called your son." And I'm going to talk more about the father's response later, but this younger son was met with a very unaccepted, gracious response from the father. Meanwhile, the older son, who has stayed there the whole time, worked his butt off, not insulted anything about his father, hears this party going on. And he comes back to the house and recognizes that his younger brother has come back and that his father has thrown him this lavish party. And the older brother is all sorts of pissed. And he has this argument with his father about all the reasons why he's the one that deserves to have the party and that he's never left his father's side and he's done everything he's asked him to do. And once again, that older son, in all of his pride and selfishness, is met with the same gracious response from a godly father who loves him unconditionally. So take a look. I like lists. Maybe you like lists. I made lists for you of the two brothers. So let's look at the younger brother as we set a context and get ready to talk about the father's response. The younger brother asked his father for what was his, like I mentioned, a tad selfish, a bit rude, gathered all that he had and took off. He literally hightailed it. You ever run from God? Anybody in this room? He threw it all away wildly. This guy indulged on every desire that he could think of. It says he began to be in need. He recognized how broken he really was. He hired himself out, and I wonder if a more accurate description as I read that he was feeding the pigs was that he whored himself out. And it says that he longed to fill his stomach. This guy was desperate. And let's look at the older brother, a very different scenario. It says that he came near the house. And I love the way that Jesus words this parable. He didn't go in, he kept it at a safe distance. So many of us keep God and our pride at a safe distance. It says that he got angry and he refused to go in. He was mad, full of hatred and resentment. He actually went on to argue with his father, presented his case, gave this long laundry list of all the reasons, how responsible he was, how good he was, how he had followed all the rules, and how he was the one that deserved this party. He was full of entitlement. Last but not least, he referred to his brother as "this son of yours." He wouldn't even call him my brother. He said, "this son of yours," pointing his finger in judgment. You know, as I look at these lists, and as you look at these lists, on any given day, I can be either one of those two brothers. And on really special days, I can be both. And I bet you can too. One of my favorite authors, Max Lucado, maybe you've heard of his name, he says this about these two brothers in this story. Very different brothers, with the same condition. He says this: self-satisfaction, self-justification, self-salvation. The operative word here is self. God will eventually tell us that we're all equal candidates for grace, but not before he proves that we are all desperately sinful. We are all equal candidates for grace because we are all desperately sinful. I remember I was talking with one of my mentors back in college as I was processing some of this stuff, and he said something that stuck with me. He said, "Lee, Jesus doesn't care that your life is messed up. He cares you think it's not." He said, "Lee, Jesus doesn't care that your life is messed up. He cares you think it's not." Now, take it easy. That analogy does fall apart a little bit if you break it down, but you get the concept, right? The younger brother knew he was broken. He knew he needed forgiveness. He knew he needed grace, and he received it. The elder brother, full of his pride, his entitlement, his to-do list of all the ways that he was better than his brother, didn't understand how broken his life was. Now, I don't want to focus too much on the sons, but it's important to talk about how different they were and the response that they got from the same loving father. And so I want to open up the text to Luke chapter 15, and this is what the story actually says in response to the younger brother of the father. It says, "While he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And so they began to celebrate." The elder brother comes and has an argument with his father, and he responds this way. He says, "My son," the father said, "you are always with me. Everything I have is yours, but we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and he is found." It was super helpful for me to list out also the ways that the father responded. And I love the way that Jesus words this. He says that the father saw him. You know, so many people have retold this story, and there's a book called The Waiting Father about this story. I remember when I was a kid, I had a big sister, and she was coming to pick me up to spend the day with me, and I was so excited. And I remember sitting on my porch waiting for her red car to come around the corner, and I bet I was out there 3 hours early. I couldn't wait for her to pick me up. We've all waited for something, right? Like maybe you waited for your kids to come home the first time they took the car, or your spouse to come home from war, whatever it is. We've all experienced that sense of waiting in anticipation. And it says that the father saw him from afar off, and the father was waiting the same way that when we run and when we end up far off, the father waits for us. It says that the father was filled with compassion and he ran. I love that, don't you? He was filled with compassion and he ran to his son. To me, it speaks to an awareness of how his son was living if he was filled with compassion. It wasn't a blind ignorance, not having any clue what his son had been doing, but in complete awareness, he had compassion and he ran. I have three nephews, and they're turning 7 this week, actually, and I remember Sam, one of them, he broke something. I don't even remember what it was. But he wasn't supposed to be playing with it. I do remember that. And he broke it, and he came to me, and he was so upset. And he was bawling, and he was like, "I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry." And I did what any loving uncle would do. I screamed at him. No, I didn't scream at him. My heart was like broken, right? Like I'm like, "Sam, oh, buddy, yeah, I know you shouldn't have done that, but I love you, and you don't need to be afraid to come to me." And I think about that moment because I wonder if me and my pride and my sin am able to have compassion like that towards my nephew, how much more can God the Father have compassion on us when we come to him in brokenness? The father was filled with compassion and he ran to him. The text says he gave his son the best robe, ring and sandals and a fattened calf, and he threw him this big party. He lavishly celebrated his son's homecoming. because that's what God does. The text says that the father went out and pleaded with the older brother. I love that. It's so consistent. He ran to the younger brother, and he went out and he pleaded with the older brother. And it's so consistent of what we see in the scriptures about God moving towards us. Right? Like, God doesn't move away from us, but he's constantly pursuing us. I've heard Jesus called the hound of heaven, relentlessly coming after his creation. The father moved towards both sons. And finally, it says that he told the older brother everything he had was his, that the father remained faithful like he always does. What I might love most about this story is that even though the sons looked very different in their behavior, the father met them both when they were at their worst. The father met them with complete acceptance and welcomed them to a better way and a different life when they were at their worst. And while I don't know many of you, my guess is that at some point you've lived this story. You've fallen on your face, or you've had a bad experience, and you haven't been met with grace. And the problem with that is that we make God like us. But like David said a couple weeks ago in the prayer series, God isn't like us. Charles Swindoll says this about grace. He says, grace is a positive and unconditional acceptance in spite of the other person. Grace is a demonstration of love that's undeserved, unearned, and totally unrepayable. I repeat, grace is God giving himself in full acceptance to someone who does not deserve it, can never earn it, and will never be able to repay it. Grace is something that we can't earn, that we don't deserve, and that we'll never be able to repay. And that's a freeing thing. Grace is experiencing intimacy in the midst of our sin and our failure. Right when we're at our worst, grace is experiencing intimacy in that moment. Let that sink in. When you fall on your face, when you blew it so big time, grace. When you end up far from where you set off to be, grace. When you're more full of yourself than anything else, grace. When you're stuffing your stomach or guzzling booze, grace. You see, church, it's not God at all that keeps us from experiencing his grace. It's us. Because we can't forgive ourselves from our pasts. We're stuck in our addictions. We don't think we're worthy. Maybe we don't think we need it. But there's only one requirement for God's grace, and that's our acceptance of it. Right? It's like a present on Christmas morning. You didn't work for it. You don't need to pay it back. It's sitting there waiting for you. All you need to do is take it and make it yours. And such is the same with grace. God never grows tired of extending his mercies. We grow tired of seeking it. But that's the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ, that God never grows tired of extending his grace when we're willing to admit that we need it and to receive it. You know, here's why I want us, church, to get this so badly. Because when we understand and experience God's grace, we can love people with different belief systems, different social classes, and different sexual orientations, even if we see things a little bit differently. If we get grace, we become solutions to the problems in our world, like ISIS and poverty and school shootings. When we get grace, radical acts of love like Love Week happen, and people's lives are forever changed. When we get grace, we live out the mission of this church and we show the world who Jesus is. Amen. You know, Jesus always taught for a response. At the end of the Sermon on the Mount, he said a lot of things. He says, I don't want you to just leave here with all this knowledge. The wise man is going to actually do the things that I talked about. And sometimes this Jesus stuff is hard to understand. And so how do we respond? How do we respond to God's grace? One, I think we need to realize that we need it. Each and every single one of us, not your friend that you wish was here, not your neighbor that you're nudging, but you. I think we need to internalize it and let it become a part of us. Talk to God about it. Read your Bible. Find a mentor. See a counselor. Start to internalize this idea of unconditional love and acceptance. That's ours to take if we want it. And the third thing is that we give it away. Give it away in the name of Jesus. You know, I didn't become a believer until I was 21 years old, in the middle of my fraternity, and I was that guy. And so a lot of this Jesus stuff was really weird to me. And I didn't get it, and I didn't know how. But I think one of the best ways to start to understand some of this Jesus stuff is to do it. I grew up in a pretty well-to-do suburb in Minneapolis, and I was struggling with this idea of poverty. And one particular day, I was downtown, and I had seen some homeless people dumpster diving. And I was so scared, I didn't know what I was going to do, but I just dove in and started dumpster diving with them. Jesus said to see the poor, and that day I saw the poor, and it changed me. I didn't understand it. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't have it all calculated, but I dove in, and it did something in me. And I think sometimes as Christians, we wait until we know what to do, and I think this week I want to challenge you with this whole idea of grace. Be like Jesus to somebody. Forgive someone that hasn't asked you for forgiveness. Meet someone with an unexpected act of grace. Do whatever it takes. Give it away in the name of Jesus. Church, let's not sit around and try to change our thinking. Let's start acting like Jesus, and maybe that will change the way we think. So this week, I want to leave you with one simple question that could have profound implications on your faith life and your relationships. What is one way that you can do something gracious this week for Jesus? What's one way? And let's take that next step together, church.